This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Good afternoon. You're on Sunday Arts with David and Neil today.
Yes, it's just the two of us. Brendan's at Midsummer having a wow of a time, I'm sure. So happy Midsummer, everyone.
Yes, definitely. And thank you to the broadcast team.
For doing a brilliant job. And also we've got to thank David Moyle for doing a brilliant job here in the studios. Wow. He really knows what he's doing. And don't forget, if you're listening to Joy later on tonight, he does a brilliant jazz show called Bent Notes.
Yeah, definitely. He's giving us a thumbs up from the studio over there.
All right. You see, he must be pretty exhausted because he's been paneling now for 4 hours.
Wow. Full day, yes.
Yeah, full day. Okay. Well, you went to see somebody. Was it last night or the night before?
Last night, David. I went to see Lloyd Cole. And I suppose I hadn't actually ever heard him live, but I was a big fan of Lloyd Cole and the Commotions back in the 80s. So right. I thought I'd give it a go. And he did a retrospective.
That's right, because he was so popular around the world and in Australia. Very hip, wasn't he?
He was very, very cool in those days.
So what was the show like?
It was great. I wasn't sure at first because it is retrospective, but then retrospectives are good because that's the music I like. All the ones I know. But it was acoustic, and so I wasn't quite sure how that would sort of play out without the backup bands and everything else. But it was actually very well done.
He's got a very strong voice, hasn't he?
He does, comes through. I mean, vocally he's very good, and that sort of plays out more with the acoustic. So that was really good. And the other little surprising thing was that he only had one other person on stage with him for the second half, and that was his son. Who also played guitar. So two acoustic guitars, basically. It was a great show.
Right. And so did the audience get into it?
I think they're all probably a lot of loyal,
Lloyd
Cole fans. And you could tell. And so I didn't feel too out of it with the age group there, David. So it was very good. and they were getting right into it. And I think everybody seemed to obviously know their stuff, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And because the retrospective covered about 10 years, it was all his stuff with the Commotions.
Yep.
Which was only about two or three, I think, albums. And then he also did some of his earliest solos as well,
right?
Which that was new to me, but it was also very interesting. So I learned a bit about his new stuff as well.
Excellent. Especially with virtually a one-man show, Hamer Hall. Yeah. It's a big venue. Did he hold the audience?
He definitely did, and it came across. Honestly, I haven't been to Hamer Hall too much lately since the refurbishment, but the acoustic there is really very good.
Yeah,
it comes across really well.
Yeah.
With the guitars as well.
Yeah. So. If it didn't, there'd be something.
Well, exactly.
Taxpayers' money would have to answer for something. All right. Well, moving on to today's show. Obviously, it's a reduced show because of Midsummer Carnival. Who's our first interview?
Our first interview is Dan West. And Dan is actually a one-third of Cooking on Three Burners.
Hi, good
Dan.
Afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
I'm very well.
Excellent.
For coming in. And you're part of Sunset Sounds, Sunset Sounds, which is right, which is coming up on the 22nd of January.
Yeah.
But before we talk about that, let's go back we always like to know about the person we've got sitting here talking to us. Where did your interest in music come from?
I guess my dad used to take me out to see live bands play around Paran and Windsor when I was
What sort of music?
I like blues bands and those sorts of things. Yeah, so that kind of sparked my interest in guitar, and he bought me my first guitar when I was about 10, 11. And so I started around then,
because it's
kind of late for some people, I guess, but it was good for me.
And early for a lot of people. Yeah. Because a lot of people don't know that they want to, play in a band or whatever until they're probably 16, 17 or older.
Yeah. And I like that. I just like that. The thing I remember most about it, I guess, is that interaction between people playing live music in a space.
Yep.
And then, people who were there to check it out, feeling and giving some kind of response back. And I kind of got onto that like as a kid, and I kind of thought, that's really awesome. I really like that kind of interaction. Not just the idea to play music just to play it for yourself, but the idea of playing it to play it out,
yep.
Which is cool. I like that idea.
And what was your first band? Or you were a solo artist?
No, not a solo artist. Band, very much a band kind of cat, I guess. So my first band that played out, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was, when was that? Kind of, when I was in year 11 in high school, this was 1990. I joined a kind of punk rockabilly band, and that was interesting experience with some older kind of cats in it, which was, yeah, interesting, I guess.
And
debaucherous, should we say.
And what sort of music have you ended up being your love? Obviously, Cooking on Three Burners.
Yeah.
We'll get to that, is where you are now. But, what is your great love of music?
What's my thing? Music?
Yeah.
Well, I guess, It sort of has really come full circle back to that whole idea of collaborating with people and communicating with people and communicating with an audience and valuing that interaction with people who aren't necessarily performing, like people who are there listening, respecting that environment. I'm really into that kind of equal kind of playing field for everybody.
Yeah, you know? Which is interesting that you're mentioning that, because a lot of people do get on stage and it's really all about them, isn't it? Just playing for their own worth or own good. They're not really that interested in the audience.
Yeah.
You've mentioned it a couple of times.
Yeah,
now.
I guess if that's cool, if that's someone else's thing, I don't really mind that, but it's definitely, my thing is definitely about kind of collaborating with the people you're making music with and the people that you're playing it for and making that space is a good time for everybody, I guess.
Right.
I really like that. And that's why I love playing in the Burners, because it's a great vehicle for that. It's a good time. Good time music. And
so a three-piece band.
Yeah.
And what instruments?
So it's an instrumental trio. It's Hammond organ, which is a big old kind of church organ.
God, I love the Hammond organ.
It's amazing, actually. Great instrument. And our man, Jake Mason, who plays that, he's incredible because he does all the bass lines with the left hand and then improvises or accompanies with the right hand. He's definitely got two brains in that head of his, I reckon. And so that's cool. And also it's two for one. You know, you don't have to hire a bass player. It's great. You're making money.
Exactly.
You
know? Yeah.
And then Ivan Kachoyan, who's our drummer, who's like an amazing kind of breakbeat, funky drummer. And I've definitely done lots of work with Choi over the years in kind of both live stuff and production stuff.
Right. Have you ever
And myself heard, on guitar. Yep.
And have you ever heard the Hammond A-Go-Go and albums like that?
Yes.
They'd only ever be available on vinyl, I should imagine.
I actually have a bunch of those records.
Oh, do you?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
They're like cheesy party favourite kind of Hammond organ family record thing.
Oh, they're awesome, though. And, you know, like those great Hammond sound with, you know, like sort of playing disco songs and stuff.
Yeah, and the preset, and sometimes using the preset drum machine things as well. Like, amazing. Yeah. Amazing music, bordering on like horrible, but mostly being awesome.
Now, Cooking on Three Burners, how long have you been part of that?
So the band's been together for quite a long time, actually. I think about 15 years.
Wow.
Or so, like quite a long time. So we, you know, we're all boys. But I've been, I'm the new kid. I've been in it maybe 4 or 5 years.
Oh, new kid. Have you learned the ropes yet?
Yeah. I think so. Now, I've definitely been able to bring my flavour to it, which has been
now
great.
Now, something amazing happened last year for Cooking on Three Burners.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
The band's 15 years old, and a 19-year-old French producer named Kungs remixed one of the tracks, an old track, actually back catalogue track, so it was about 8 years old, that track.
How did he find it?
He just kind of found it on the internet, you know? Like,
right.
I guess he just sort of found it, and he did this version where he'd kind of remixed it just using the mixed kind of track. And then he contacted the band and asked if he could like do an official release of it.
Yeah.
And so the band checked it out, and everyone kind of agreed that that was a good thing to do. And so we gave him the individual stems for the track, which is like the components of the track in separate files. So then he could really kind of dig in and chop it up and do his thing on it. And, it kind of went gangbusters overseas, which was amazing. Sort of went number one in
Germany.
Yeah. And kind of like France and all over, actually. Number two in UK, I think, and it was just insane for this kind of Melbourne kind of, we're ostensibly a kind of soul, sweet soul and kind of dirty dance floor, retro funk kind of band, you know. And so to have this kind of attention has been pretty...
All right, let's have,
amazing.
Yeah. Let's have a listen to this song. A lot of Joy people will know it because it's a track that, we've played on Sunday Arts Magazine quite a few times, but it's also been played across the day on the station because it went top 40 here as well in Australia, didn't it?
Yeah.
Only because of the success overseas. It was never picked up beforehand. So what's it called?
It's This Girl. It's the Kungs remix of This Girl. It's called versus Cooking on Three Burners.
Who's the vocals on it? Because
the
incredible
amazing,
vocals.
Yeah, Carly Aldist.
Right.
She's amazing. She's a good buddy of ours, an amazing singer.
And she actually had her own album out soon after you guys had the big success.
Yeah, she's
you?
Released a couple of records.
Yep.
So her new record's really great. It's called Family Tree, and it's a kind of boogie record. It's really awesome.
Fantastic.
Type.
All right, here we go. You're on Joy. You're on Joy 94.9. Happy midsummer, everyone. I hope you're having a good time down there. If you're listening to Joy or if you're out there driving, you've missed out. It's a great day, but there's always next year. You are on Sunday Art Magazine, and we have Dan West from Cooking on Three Burners, and that was your international hit that we just played. This Girl, which is just phenomenal for you.
Yeah, it's been great. It's definitely allowed us to talk to some people.
So what does this do for a band when you said it lets us talk to people? What do you mean by
that? People kind of pick up the phone or get back to your emails or kind of know a little bit more about you. It's sort of in the public's ear, I guess, a bit more. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. You get to kind of meet a few more people.
We got to go
to the Arias.
Did you? You nominated, were you?
Yeah, for the Apple Music Song of the Year, it got nominated, that track. So.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so we got to go there and hang out and hang out with our publisher and who you know.
You've got a new album on its way.
Yes.
How soon will that be?
Well, we're mastering it this Thursday, actually. So, yeah, I think probably a March or an April drop is on the cards.
Okay. Now, what sort of form is it going to take? Is it going to sound a little bit like This Girl, or because that was remixed, it doesn't really have that sound?
Yeah, so we delineate between kind of remix projects and kind of the band definitely has a sound, like a soul kind of sound. So this record is definitely back to the trio and back to the kind of fire of playing together and three musicians in a room and trying to get the heat down on tape. We recorded on analog tape, so that was kind of old school.
Yeah, nice very
and,
old school.
Nice and crunchy, sounding good.
And you use different vocalists on this new album?
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, so we've got a couple of vocalists. We've done some more tracks with Kylie. We work with Kylie Aldist, who's the singer on This Girl.
Yep.
And so we've got a couple of tracks with her, which we've co-written. And we work with Stella Angelico, who you may not know. She's an amazing Melbourne singer. So she's performing with us at our upcoming gig, actually.
Okay, and when's that?
It's the 22nd of this month.
And that is part of Sunset Sounds.
Sunset Sounds, yeah.
Now, it's the final one of the Sunset. There's one on today.
Yep.
And you've got the final one, which is Sunday the 22nd.
Yep, it's at Malvern Gardens at 6 p.m.
Beautiful venue.
Yep.
Have you been there before?
Yeah, I have, yeah. Yeah, I kind of grew up in and around Stonington a little bit. So.
Right. Okay, because this is put on by the City of Stonington.
Yeah, it's their kind of outdoor summer vibes.
Yeah. And what sort of set will you do? You know, like, because you've got a support act as well, haven't you?
So Vanessa Fernandez is playing before us.
Yep.
She's really great. So if you haven't checked her out, you should get on the internets and have a look at her. She's a beautiful singer. So I think she's doing either a duo or a trio. So she sings kind of standards and some other stuff. And then we'll be turning up the heat with our usual kind of funky breakbeat set and a bunch of instrumentals and some vocals with our special guest Stella Angelico.
Yeah. So brilliant. Because the first of these three concerts that they're doing, or gigs or whatever you want to call them, was Deborah Conway.
Yeah, Deborah
so
Conway.
So it's very different. Each one's very, very different to the one before.
Yeah, I think that's good. But I think they're all really work well in a kind of outdoor kind of setting. And Fem Belling's playing today at 6, actually.
Yep.
And she's supported by Fulton Street, who are really awesome kind of new up and coming heavy hitting funk band too. So they're really good. They've actually released a couple of 45s on our drummer's label. So,
right.
Yeah.
And do you, you know, like where did this come from? Was it out of the blue that you actually got the call? Would you like to do it or?
We've done some gigs for them before. Like, they have the Sunnington kind of jazz festival. We did some gigs there. Over the years. And so, yeah, they just kind of, well, they come in. Summer's a busy time for us, so we're loving it. Just kind of getting to play as much as possible.
Well,
as
and especially people. Your sort of sound. It's, it's very, very much that. Remember Vibes on a Summer's Day?
I do.
Oh, my God.
I do remember that.
Those gigs were so amazing.
Yeah.
And it's a shame they never continued on, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah. That was a great gig. When was that? Was that in St Kilda? Or?
Well, yeah. And they also did them at the My Music Bowl as
well. Yeah, yeah. That's
right. But I was living in Sydney, and they used to do it at the Bondi Pavilion.
Oh, yeah. I know that. I know
and,
that.
And right. it was really, really cool, and it was only about 5,000 to 8,000 people tops.
Yep.
I think it moved to bigger premises by the time I'd moved down here. But it was great, and it was all that very much that sort of vibe, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of. I think acid jazz was pretty big around that time as well.
And I love the acid jazz. Yeah. That faded so quickly, didn't it? It was only around for about 3 or 4 years, and then just bang, it was gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Although a lot of those artists have gone on to other stuff. Let's have a listen to another one of your tracks, which is off of a Japanese album that we're playing.
Yeah, so I brought you in the official Japanese release of this the most recent album, which is Blind Bet, which was released 2014. We got that when we went to Japan. We did some gigs over there at the end of 2014, I think it was. Played the Tokyo Jazz Festival and that sort of thing.
Oh my God, that
would
be so
heavy.
Cool.
Heavy, yeah, it was amazing, yeah.
So do you get much work internationally? Well, you would now with this hit single.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of opening up some more doors for that as well, yeah. So we're hoping to look at going over to Europe in the not too distant future and do some playing over there.
Brilliant. We're on the back of this new album.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about this track.
So this is a track featuring the amazing Kylie Aldist. Again, this is called Mind Made Up. And this is the Burners original version.
Okay.
You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Okay, that was Mind Made Up from Cooking with Three Burners. Sorry, Dan.
No worries.
We've still got Dan in the studio with us here, and now you were telling us about your the show that you're doing next Sunday, isn't it? So
yeah, we've got a gig for Sunset Sounds, put on by City of Stonington, which is taking place next Sunday, the 22nd, at 6 p.m. It's outside at Malvern Gardens.
Brilliant. So, Sandra, I'll be there.
Excellent.
After our show next Sunday night, I'll come on down. Thank you so much for coming in today and sharing your music.
Thanks for having me. It's
been awesome. And congratulations on the amazing success you had last year, and can't wait to hear this new album.
Thanks. Thanks very much.
You're on Joy 94.9 at Sunday Arts Magazine. Joy.
Now, that was This Is Not Real Love by Mucho Bueno and George Michael. You're listening to Sunday Arts with David and Neil.
That was beautiful track, even though we weren't really listening. That did sound quite beautiful. Now, who's our next guest?
Okay, in the studio today, now we have Alison Bennett and Michelle James. Now, Alison expanded photographer from what I've read, and you've got a show at the Kingston Arts.
Yes, I do. It's opening on Thursday night down in Moorabbin. Mm.
And Michelle, you actually work at Kingston Arts, but before we go into all of that, I suppose we wouldn't mind having a bit of a chat about, I suppose, your background and you know. And
Alison, you tell us. Yeah, how did you get involved in the arts?
Look, I put it down to my grandmother exposing me to a lot of artwork. She spent most of
lucky
her,
you.
I know. She was extremely extremely creative person. She travelled widely. So she subscribed to art magazines from Asia particularly. So she
was she an artist herself?
I think in retrospect she was. She wasn't sort of an exhibiting artist.
Yeah.
But she actually was a textile artist. So okay. She did tapestry and knitting.
Right.
So she would actually made a little bit of money by designing knitting programs and knitting designs and selling them to magazines.
Oh, wow.
I know.
I mean, say that, she, you know, because that's a real technical.
Exactly.
You know, that understanding.
In fact, my father dedicated his PhD in computer science to her.
Oh,
because,
gee.
Yeah, because he felt he learnt how to think, how to program by watching her do all the coding for her knitting.
Yeah.
Wow.
And back in that era, knitting wouldn't be looked at as an art form. Where now it is. Well, you know, the whole crocheting and with people wrapping them around trees.
Exactly.
And whatever, yes. Which I absolutely adore. Mm. And at Christmas time here in it was down Swanson Street, all the trees were wrapped in Christmas colours, yep. Which were beautiful.
Yes.
So, you know, like a bit of ahead of her time in
totally.
That respect.
And I've actually just completed my PhD in digital art practice, and I thought about her the whole time I was doing it. It was kind of like a conversation.
Lovely.
A conversation with the dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, did you go and study art?
I did.
Whereabouts?
Look, I did my undergrad back in the 80s in Sydney, what was called then the City Art Institute,
yep.
Which is part of the University of New South Wales. I majored in photography.
Was that in the old jail in, or wasn't in Darlinghurst?
No, yes, it is in Darlinghurst, but I don't remember it being a jail.
Right. Well, you would have known because it was a wall all around it.
No, that was, that's the National Arts School, so it's quite close by.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, so you studied there?
I was studied there in the 80s, and when we got our first computer lab, it was like 6 Macs in a little cardboard room, yep. A little cupboard, and there were 6 computers for the entire university campus.
Wow.
Yeah. So I tell that to my students when they're sort of sitting there in these beautiful labs. I say, when I was in your shoes,
yeah.
In the 80s, we had 6 computers for the whole school, for the whole university.
Gosh. So it would have made it difficult learning, unless you had your own computer, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very expensive back then too, weren't they?
Well, I mean, I had a rather unusual experience in relation to computers. My father was a computer scientist.
Oh.
So I grew up with a personal computers in the house.
Oh, gosh.
And I was quite shocked recently to find that in the 70s, when I was a child,
yeah.
That there were only 50,000 personal computers on the planet. And one of them was in my home.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
how lucky were you?
So it meant that I had have quite a different approach to digital technology than most people of my generation because I was exposed to it as a child.
Yep.
So, like, when I had kids, my son could log on and find the Wiggles website when he was 3 years old by himself. Yeah.
And then, that's either a good or a bad thing.
And then change the password to the computer.
Oh.
Yes. That was interesting.
Is that your father's side coming into it, maybe?
Yeah, a little bit.
So, it was obvious then where you were going to end up within your art form.
Well, I don't know. I mean, this is before digital cameras existed. So, when I've got my first digital camera in 2001, I actually remember downloading the photographs and starting to work with them, and I burst into tears because it was kind of like, this is what I've been waiting for. You know, I was would have been in my late 30s or so, and
yeah.
For the first time in my life, I had the tools to do what I needed to do.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And so now you've progressed to where you are now,
mm-hmm.
And is this one of your first exhibitions? Or?
Oh, darling, no.
No?
No. I've been exhibiting since the 80s on and off.
Right.
But I really committed to exhibiting about 10 years ago. So I've been sort of holding, I've been pursuing my practice in that time.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah.
And you mentioned about students you teach.
I do. I teach photography and history of photography, and I teach advanced digital imaging at Deakin University.
Wow. The wonderful thing about photography right this very moment in time is how huge it is.
Yeah.
Because of social media.
Oh, yeah.
Instagram.
It's a totally different medium in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like, I love Instagram. Can't stand it when people, you know, like still put their own image up or food. But all the friends I've got are from around the world, which they do some extraordinary things
yes.
On Instagram.
Yep.
It really is quite exciting, yeah. Isn't it?
Look, since the introduction of the iPhone in 2007, the numbers for the amount of photographs that are being put online is just exponential. I saw some data recently, and in 2014, there were 4 billion photographs being uploaded every day.
Yep.
It doesn't surprise me. It's more than every day, more than was ever taken in the 19th century. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. And what I also love is that it was all dying, and now all of a sudden it's back only a camera, mm-hmm. isn't it? And what it's done to somebody like myself is that I love to go out and take photos to show the world.
Yeah.
But what's frustrating me is that my phone isn't enough anymore. I need a camera, and it's sending people back buying cameras, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah, and it's really interesting to put a big digital SLR camera in the hands of a young person and teach them how to use it, because they're sort of used to just having a phone where they can take a snap and go, actually, this is how it works. This is the technology. Yep. This is what you can do with it. And they start to realize it's a really powerful tool.
Yeah. And to me, it is such a wonderful art form as well. And we have lots of photographers on this show talking about photography as a real art form. Mm-hmm. But you're taking it to another limit. But before we go there, Michelle, give us your background.
Yeah, so I'm currently sort of acting in the role of visual arts coordinator at Kingston Arts. So essentially that's part of the City of Kingston Council.
Yep.
Yep. And I met Alison through Justin Gaynor, whose role I'm acting in. And last year she was working with us during our sort of pop-up bar series.
Uh-huh.
And she presented her work, Virtual Drag. So that was kind of a new thing for our community. And it's really great to finally be able to program something specifically for Midsummer this year.
Right. And how did you, you know, like, where did you study? Where did your interest come from to do all of this?
Yeah, so I also studied art as well, like Alison. So I studied at Monash. I don't know. So I studied a studio practice as well, and I try and maintain that. But I guess I was also looking at, you know, an essential way to make an income, an interesting way to make an income. And I find a sort of community context sort of, I guess, nourishes the idea of having kind of quite a social arts practice, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michelle, I did exactly the same thing when I was your age. I worked for a couple of galleries and found out how the whole business works and how you put together an exhibition and how you promote it and what is the context in which an exhibition happens. So, it's a very well-worn path.
It really is. And it's one that we all take for granted that, oh, yes, you know, like you throw a few things up on the wall and that's all you have to do. And finding the right people to exhibit as well is really important. But isn't it wonderful how the councils now are doing great work in this arena?
Oh, yeah. Yes. In addition to Kingston, the gallery down in, is it Werribee, where the other show is on?
Wyndham?
Wyndham, yes. Thank you. I showed down there a few years ago as well, and they're doing amazing. They've got amazing programming.
Mm.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. You're on Joy 94.9 at Sunday Arts Magazine.
Joy.
You're on Joy 94.9 here in Sunday Arts with David and Neil. And in the studio, we've kept Alison and Michelle here. We've just been hearing a little bit about their backgrounds. Now I think we want to actually hear a little bit about what your current project is at the moment.
Cool.
So, Michelle, did you want to start? Because I think that's your main job, isn't it? The Kingston Arts?
I guess so, yeah. So essentially we've curated our first midsummer program, and we've asked Alison Bennett to kind of put together the show. And it's called Mulebrity and Other Collaborations. And correct me if I'm pronouncing Mulebrity wrong?
I pronounce Mulebrity.
Mulebrity,
okay. Because I was thinking how to
pronounce it. I know, right?
Now, how do you pronounce that?
Mm-hmm. Good question.
So what does it mean?
It means the qualities of a woman.
Yeah.
So female qualities.
Okay.
It's possibly the female equivalent of virility.
Okay, yeah.
So I was looking for a word that talked about female identity in a way that sort of was sort of fresh and more poetic than girls or...
Yeah, I know.
it was a thesaurus came to my rescue, and it was a word that I felt had a beautiful sound to it.
Right.
And I wanted to look at feminine identity expression in queer culture, and not in terms of a general sort of cross-section representational way, but in way of just sort of thinking about the women in my life who don't necessarily look queer, but and who express their identity in a very particular way that might be more ambiguous, not necessarily look whether they're heterosexual or gay. You can't necessarily pick them, but they're very much expressing who they are. but who they are is also a queer woman too. Yeah. So there's a lot of complexity around that.
And it is so much broader now, isn't it, than it's ever been before. And that's why it's not just gay and lesbian community anymore. There are so many other like words that we use within the community.
Indeed, yeah.
So, and how long did this take you to come up with the concept and the idea?
Oh, gosh, I haven't really been keeping track of that. Justin bought me a cup of coffee 6 months ago, I think.
Yeah, it feels like a long time ago.
It was
now,
quite a while ago. And he sort of said to me, I want you to make a work for Kingston. And I was like, this is great. This is fantastic. So I'd had a project down there last year. Hmm. And I was really interested in their audience. It was, a very mainstream suburban kind of audience. But they responded so enthusiastically to the virtual drag content that we presented down there. And so I wanted to sort of find a way. I've been thinking about their audience because there are also a number of people there who, not everyone I encountered there was heterosexual, but the complexities around identifying ourselves to each other. Mm. So that's kind of what I was interested in responding to. So the work has been made in response to my thinking about that Kingston Arts and their audience.
I think it's interesting in terms of the way I've kind of spoken about the upcoming exhibition to sort of, I guess, what I perceive as the audience we kind of regularly have, because we have a lot of recurring exhibitions, I suppose, and a lot of sort of community organisations that have sort of drawing and painting shows with us. And I remember talking about your show, and people were genuinely interested, not just because of the content in terms of it being, sort of for a queer audience, but also in terms of the technology and the potential of that and 3D.
Well, that's the thing that, you know, because... luckily, you've shown it to us, and it's blown Neil and myself away with how powerful and how... there's a word for it. It's a sophistication of it. Obviously, you've been working in this forum for a while that you really can know what you're doing. Mm. It is just visually beautiful to look at. Describe it to us.
So it's actually very, very simple. All it is a woman walking out of the dark towards a piece of glass, and they walk up to the glass and press their face into the glass and then step back and walk away. And so they're surrounded by darkness and this face emerges out of the darkness. But in the gallery, it's projected using Anaglyph 3D. So you go into a big darkened space and you put on 3D glasses, and these figures emerge out of the darkness and are actually sort of 3D in the space with you.
And how big are they?
So the face will be sort of floor to ceiling. So, what is that? How tall is the gallery space?
It's probably, I'm trying to think.
Two metres?
Probably even more than that. Three, potentially.
Okay, so you've got a 3-metre 3D face in front of you.
And how hard was it sort of finding the right sort of image of the people that you wanted in the to be walking towards the camera?
Look, at first I felt like I had to be representative of every sort of type of feminine face that I could think of, and it just started to feel like I was going in the wrong direction. So what I did, I pulled it back to people that I actually had an emotional relationship with, my friends and family and people that I had that I knew in my life.
And that would be more comfortable about just that movement as well, wouldn't they?
Well, part of my skill set as an artist is persuading people to be subjects with me, so that's not usually an issue. But I just sort of felt like in terms of the kind of softness and vulnerability and gentleness that I wanted to express, that it needed to be people that I had a little bit of connection with. So, there's about six people in the project, all of whom are very sort of people who celebrate their feminine identity. So mostly quite young people as well. Not all of them are, but... yeah, it's very straightforward, people I know.
And how long does it take for us as the audience to walk in and look at all half a dozen people?
Look, it's only about 10 minutes or so it's quite short. But my work is much more about sort of like giving you an encounter with an idea, and that doesn't need to take very long. You've seen a small part of it, and already you've got a strong sense of what the idea is.
But... wanting to see more.
Oh, good.
Yeah, like that was the thing. Yeah, and I'm thinking, is 10 minutes enough? But you can obviously stand there and watch it a second time.
Totally. And it's designed to be contemplated. Like, it's not like watching a movie where you watch it once and you've got it. Mm. You watch it again and again and again. And that's the thing with photography. It's not just about the narrative story. The photograph is designed to be looked at and contemplated and repeatedly.
Yeah. And the wonderful thing is it's 3D. Mm-hmm. So therefore it's that much realer, mm-hmm. isn't it? Yeah. And it's not like a film per se.
No.
It's very real.
Yeah. And there's a part of, because 3D affects your brain quite differently to 2D images, that sense of reality is heightened. That's the thing we've found with creating virtual reality content, is that the brain has difficulty distinguishing, even though you know intellectually that it's not real. There's a level in which your brain goes, this is actually in the room with me. I'm actually experiencing this.
Yeah. And that's the wonderful thing about that whole arena of mm-hmm. 3D is that, yeah, it shocks the shit out of you sometimes, doesn't it? You often have to take the glasses off and think, is it, what's happening?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, there's a lot of quite boring and bad 3D out there. It's such a new technology that we're still working it out.
Oh, do you think it's still quite new?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. No, we're still trying to get the sense of what's possible with it.
Okay.
And certainly, I mean, that's what, whenever you get a new technology, people try and recreate what they know, and then working out what it can do takes a bit of time.
Yeah.
I think.
Okay. And Michelle, the exciting thing about this is that this is the first time you've actually done anything with Midsummer.
Mm.
And it's the furthest anything has actually been used for Midsummer outside of the city.
Yeah, apparently. I think I'll have to genuinely fact check that when I head down to the carnival today. But yeah, as far as we know, it seems to be as far out as they've gone.
Right. Which is really exciting. And that's the wonderful thing about this festival is that it's important that it's appealing to a wider reach of people, because we, you know, like our community doesn't all live in a city, even though a high percentage of us do. Mm. More and more people are living further out, aren't they?
And I mean, I guess it's about visibility as well, because obviously, you know, we'd have that kind of expansive community, but, you know, producing that kind of visibility and saying that, you know, we do think about our, like, LGBTIQ community in the city of Kingston.
Yep.
It's just, you know, part of the aims of this kind of project and commissioning something specifically.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful. And thank you so much for coming in on such an important day, Carnival Day. Have you been down at all yet? I'm going down now as well. And Alison, what's it called again?
Malebrity.
And it's showing down at Kingston Arts, mm-hmm. which is in Moorabbin.
Yep.
The address is 979 Nepean Highway.
Yep.
It's sort of in a funny, it's not really on Nepean Highway. Mm,
it's just as it becomes the Nepean Highway, essentially.
Yeah. And you can't miss it. There's a huge tower, isn't there? And the train station's just there as well.
Yeah. And the other thing I guess Alison didn't quite mention is the fact that we're also showing this work on a kind of outdoor projection space. So it's called The Bridge. So you'll actually be able to see it from that section of the Nepean Highway and the footpath as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's going to be a larger scale as well.
So you can go inside and see in the closed room, but then as the people driving down the road, we'll be able to see it as well.
Yeah, you'll see the giant faces emerging from the darkness.
Alison and Michelle, thank you so much for coming in. And it's showing from the 19th of January till when?
Till the 25th, I believe.
Okay, brilliant. And it's down at, as we said, down there on Nepean Highway. Thanks, girls, and look forward to seeing it.
Great, thanks, David.
Thank you.
You're here on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
You're here on Joy 94.9, listening to Sunday Arts. And David, we've almost come to the end of our show.
We have. And you know, it was a reduced show, as we were saying, because we were broadcasting live from Carnival from midday today. But, you know, like, how interesting is that exhibition? And you know, like, and I think it's really important that, the city of Kingston is doing something like this, and it's down in Moorabbin, so that people can go down there and check it out.
And like you said, also, you know, it's sort of not everybody in our community actually lives in the city or close, you know. So there are people out there in the suburbs, and it gives them a lot more access.
Yep.
And as Michelle said, it's also visibility. So other people need to know what our community is capable of doing and, yep. and is actually doing yep. at the moment.
And so. Alison Bennett, you know, like I'd reckon Google her because she is what she's doing is pretty special, and I think she's going to be doing a lot more in the future. So somebody to keep an eye on, I think. And of course we were lucky enough to have Dan West from Cooking on Three Burners, and we were playing his song This Girl, which was number one all through Europe mid last year, and they're local lads and they're playing. Where are they playing?
They're playing at Malvern Gardens, I think, isn't it?
Yep.
Next Sunday.
Yep.
And I think that's just whenever the sun goes down, so there's no
particular... 6 o'clock.
Yep, exactly. Yep. So get down there. It's a free show.
Yeah.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.